Welcome to the Linguist Lounge, a podcast dedicated to all us world language teachers who want a place for ideas, humor, and professional development. Whether you're a seasoned veteran or just starting out in the field of language education, we aim to offer valuable insights and practical tips to help you improve your teaching skills that will better connect you with your students and your craft. From classroom strategies and lesson planning to cultural immersion and technology integration, we cover it all in a fun, quick, and engaging way that will leave you feeling inspired and motivated to take your teaching to the next level. Welcome back, everybody, to another exciting episode of the Linguist Lounge. You're here with your host, Luke, today, and I am literally chilling in my playroom at my house. It's like the most cozy place in the world to record, so this is usually where I am if I'm not at school, at the audio lab kind of situation there. But I did, much has happened since we've spoken last. I said that I was going to do every 2 weeks, and yeah, we've done a lot in the last 2 weeks. So we went on a little bit of a road trip, kind of like a used bookstore crawl. There was a local bookstore here in Nashville that was celebrating their 50th anniversary, and they have 5 locations. So they had a road trip. You could go to, if you made to every location in a day, you got a lot of credit, like a lot of used book credit. So we did that, and that was really fun. We stayed on Elon and at the college there in North Carolina at the inn at Elon, and it was beautiful. Definitely worth the extra expense of staying there, but it was so beautiful. And then on the way back, we hit Asheville and we went through Knoxville, and it was just a really nice time. I got a new microphone, so I'm kind of testing it out with microphone and headphone situation here. It sounds pretty good, but you guys will have to let me know what you think. Yeah, just let me know if it's too loud, or maybe if there's extra sounds, or I feel like it's doing okay, but maybe it's picking up stuff that I can't hear. The funny thing is I'm literally using my daughter's headphones because they're the only headphones in the house that have a cord. So that is, maybe I hope that I don't stretch them out too much. I have a big head. She has a little bit of a big head too, though. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, so we're going to be leaving for another sort of like semi, I don't want to say vacation, but getaway tomorrow. So I'm trying my best to do, to keep myself accountable to having a podcast up every 2 weeks. So today I kind of thought what we could do is, just kind of like go through some questions that maybe people ask a lot, me often as a teacher or as a world language educator. And so I have a list here of some questions that I'd like to kind of like ask myself and then answer myself. So today, let's just go ahead and get started with that. Has anybody been, before I start the questions, but has anybody been to their classroom yet? I did go to my classroom last week, just to kind of get the chairs and the desks down stacked and set up, because I felt like that was going to be very helpful to me when I got back into school, and I think it will be. Our floors get waxed every summer, so it's kind of like a mystery each time I enter the school. I'm like, which door should I go in today? Which door did I go in last time? Am I still able to access my classroom through that door? I took my daughter with me, and she was like, we went through that door, but we came out this door. And I'm like, yes, it's like a maze in there. If you teach at a big school, you know what I'm talking about, but like a lot of different doors, it basically lead to the same place at my school. So there's always a way to get somewhere. If you can't go through one door, you can always go in through a second door. So, you know, that's just kind of where we're at today. But yeah, let's just go ahead and get started with some questions here. So the first one I have is, what's the most effective and funniest icebreaker that you've used in a language class? I don't know if funny is a word I would use, because I am of the opinion that icebreakers are really terrible. And what I mean by that is, I feel like most of the kids in that class probably already know each other, and so the icebreaker is only serving the purpose for you to know them, and I think that that's impossible to do in one day. So something that I started doing a few years ago, and I don't think I'm going to like rework it or anything because I really enjoy it, is I make sort of like facts about myself. It's kind of like it's like two truths and a lie, but it's not, because I'm not speaking. So what I do is I hand out cards, and I'll put up on a slide, for example, on the project. I'll project it on the screen and say, Profe went to school at ... And I'll put it all in Spanish just so that we have a little bit of input on that first day. But I'll say, Profe Se graduó de, and then I'll have like two choices, right? Like MTSU, for example, here if you're in Tennessee, or ETSU, something like that. And basically what they have to do is they have to decide which one fits, which one's correct. And so I give them at their tables, I give each table a set, and I give them about 10 or 15 minutes just to kind of put them together. And then we just talk about it. It's a good way for them to get to know me. Cause I feel like the icebreaker thing is really more for them than it is for me. Because really and truly, they know each other. A lot of times we're teaching kids all in the same grade that have probably interacted on some level before. So I just feel like, and also icebreakers, like they're just so played out in my opinion. Like I feel like we just go through this rigmarole every single year. And also you have to realize that like these kids are coming from another classroom where they literally just did the same thing. So I just feel like for me, I'm just going to do something different. And that has been really fun. I wouldn't say that it's like funny, you know. I don't think that, I don't know. Maybe if you have had my class and you thought that was funny, please let me know, because I know that some of you listen to this, but most of the time it's not really funny. It's more just informational, you know, get to know Prof. a little bit. And I'm sorry if you hear my dog squeaking her toy in the background. That's literally what's going on in the room beside me. Okay, the second one, how do you incorporate humor into your teaching to make lessons more engaging? I don't know how I incorporate humor, but I know that I have to. For me, I'm like naturally a funny person, so I feel like if my classroom is not going to be funny, if I'm not going to be funny, I feel like my kids are not going to be learning. And so for me, I just try to be as crazy as possible. I know that there are pictures from a few years ago, pretty much every year, because I do this every year at some point, but I like stand on the desk sometimes and teach, or to get people's attention, I'll usually sing a lot. Like I'll make up songs and sing them, or I'll sing the instructions. There's something about music that just gets people to understand more, or maybe not understand more, but listen to you more. And I had a kid last year for one semester, because he went to another teacher the second semester. Just his schedule worked out that way, but he would always be like, oh God, no. Every time I would sing instructions, he'd be like, please stop. And it just became a really funny kind of joke. But I do think that, you know, just being silly, I think that, you know, it's the kid, sometimes these students are like coming from another class or another part of their day where it was really serious. Like maybe they had to read or they had to do math. And I'm like, I want to provide a little levity for them. So I think if I can do something that's like silly or funny, or even just like, you know, like a lot of times what I'll even do is I'll ask them to teach me their slang, right? Because I want to know what the kids are saying these days. Because I don't want to ever be that person that's like using a word or using a term that's not cool anymore. So I always ask them, like, what are you guys saying? How would you describe this? Or what word would you use to, what interjection would you use here? And it's just a fun thing. I mean, it's funny for them because it's like I'm a millennial and they really want to rag on millennials all the time, which I do think that we have some things that we could be ragged on about. But I think it's funny for them to like teach me the word and then I can use it. And then they'll just be like, I didn't like that, or that was cringy or whatever. I think it's funny, and they think it's funny too. Like at the end of the day, that's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to create humor. So those are some things that I've just done in the past. I will absolutely continue doing that. I just want to be silly. I want people to think that I'm funny and silly. I've always been like that. But even as a teacher, I think that that's one of the ways to get kids really invested and engaged in what you're doing, is to make that you seem approachable. You seem fun. You want to be, you're somebody they want to be with and be in their class and, you know, hang out with, and that they remember and they come back, you know, 2 years when they don't have you anymore and be like, hey, what's going on? Like I see kids all the time, you know, that had me before, and they come back and see me every year and they're just like, I just remember how much fun I had. And for example, I was just thinking about a kid now, but he had always asked me for a stapler like every single day. I don't know what he was stapling. Like, what are you doing, kid? But so I just wrote his name on the stapler, and his name is literally still on the stapler, and kids ask me about that every single year. And it's just a funny, like, funny story that I like to tell about just a, you know, how that child made such an impact on me that I literally wrote his name on a stapler because he asked me for it every day. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I couldn't tell you how to incorporate humor. I think everybody has to do that in a different way. But for me, it's like such a key element to my classroom. Okay, next one. What's the best way to teach grammar without boring students to death? Okay, so I was thinking about this because I had recently gone to a training, a professional development session, if you will, on communicative competencies. And the man who did it was brilliant. But some people in the classroom were so, it was so interesting to me to hear so many people really like preach about how they really love to teach grammar. Because like, yeah, that's such a key proponent or key component, I should say, of our, you know, language teaching. But at the same, in the same instance, there's so much more to it than that. I think we can teach, you know, function and context, and I think we can use the words in real life speech ways, speech patterns, so that we don't have to teach like isolated grammar. And I do think that there's some merit to doing that as well, but I don't think we should be spending like our whole teaching career just teaching on, you know, grammar. And so what I try to do is I try to teach it in context, like I said. I also try to always provide a way for them to access the language in like a low risk way. So for me, that looks like maybe a word wall where I give them the seven most frequently used verbs in Spanish. And I say, okay, this is for you. This is here for you. So when you need to come up with something to say, you can look up there and say, okay, well, I have the yo form and I have the third person form. So the he, she, or it. And that's a good way for them to have access to language maybe they don't feel confident with yet, or that they are sort of reaching toward, for them to put sentences together. Another thing that I like to do is provide them with question words, because you can ask the question word to get to your point easier than having to try to figure out how to say the whole sentence. So, you know, we're going to do this. Okay, well, why? Or who? Or what? So I want for them to be able to access the language in like a low-risk kind of way. I don't really feel like, I've never felt like, you know, we say like regurgitation, right? So I'm going to teach you like hablar, and I'm going to teach you like hablo, hablas, habla. I don't really think that that's like beneficial necessarily, because it's not in context. And I think, you know, you could have, I have friends now who are my age who remember their Spanish class and can pull out all this information and all this grammar, but they don't have any idea what to do with it. So I think, you know, it's really less about the grammar. It's less about the teaching of the grammar. It's more about the way you're teaching it, right? Because I want to teach it in context. I want to teach it in a real-world fashion. So I don't spend more than, you know, 10 or 15 minutes introducing a grammar topic, and then we just use it. We just utilize it. And I think that that's been really beneficial for my classroom as well. I've never want to be the person who simply just teaches a grammar concept and is like, okay, go do it. You know, I want to give them ways to utilize it in a real world fashion. So yeah, that's how I teach it without boring students to death. Okay, next one. How do you handle a class where students have vastly different language proficiency levels? This is a great question, because inevitably every single year we have our heritage speakers, we have our native speakers, we have our non-native speakers. And y'all, the dog is really going crazy in there with the squeaky toy, and I apologize, but maybe this will add a little fun little element to your listening experience. I don't know. So every single year in usually my upper division, I have, you know, a number of students who either come from Spanish background or have some Spanish, or maybe they're self-taught a bit, or then I always have those starting from zero. And so, like I said in the previous question about grammar, I do think that it's really our job as teachers is to make things accessible. So I want to provide them a activity that can be sort of like modified for different levels, right? So for example, if I say something that we do a lot in my classes, because I think it's important to sort of practice for my AP, for the kids who are going to go on to AP. And so I try to start it in Spanish 1, is we do a lot of like letters, right? Or email responses, if you're familiar with the terminology, where I'll have them write a response to an email that they've received. Usually the email is very general about, it's usually after we talk about school, because I can have them talk about, you know, by that point, they can say, my name is, I'm from, I go to school at, I have this class at this time, I have this class at this time. And that is really a good way for me to kind of individualize that for each student, because inevitably what will happen is if a kid knows more Spanish, they're able to add more information. For those people, for those kids or those students who have like a background, I say we're starting from zero, not a zero, like a grade, but like a, they've never had any Spanish, they don't have a background in Spanish, they can just do, you know, they can just hit what the rubric says. But I think that that's important because that does allow for maybe kids who have more of a background, or kids that have, you know, a little bit of self-study or whatever, whatever their level is they're able to respond to that prompt and they're able to do it at their own level. And I love that because it really does give me sort of a viewpoint into like how they're doing, right? Because I think a lot of times we think of, especially in like a lower level Spanish class, we think, oh my goodness, this kid already speaks Spanish. They're not going to be able to, they're not going to learn anything here, right? They already know it all. But something that's really beneficial is to take the time to go through and say, okay, let's check your punctuation. Let's check your grammar usage. Let's check your spelling. Because a lot of times that comes into play. And yeah, like I said, once again, it's also just a very real world application, right? Because we can make a lot of activities. Like I can make up activities all day long, but at the end of the day, I do think it's really important that these things are things that they're going to be doing in their life. And I think that those are skills that they can take on, you know, if they travel for work or if they come in contact with someone who's a Spanish speaker after this class, they should still be able to say like, my name is, I'm this many years old, I'm from, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's like really providing that structure of modification for, you know, the individual needs of each student is really important. And also just like, I find that grouping is very important as well. I definitely don't want to put kids in a group where everybody in the group already knows Spanish, because that's not going to benefit me or them whatsoever. So I like to try to, I don't want to use the terminology of like table leaders, because I think that's a bit, maybe elitist, but I think that is important to assign some sort of role, especially to a person or a student who already speaks Spanish, because they can get a lot out of being like a mini teacher in a way. Obviously, I don't want to put the responsibility of being a teacher onto them, but I do think that they could help in a classroom setting. And so that's a lot of times that's what I'll do is I'll be like, hey, can you please help me with, you know, going around and making sure that everybody knows what they're doing, or just checking in with the people at your table. And so I do find that grouping is very important as well. So that's how I deal with sort of like language proficiency levels and differing language proficiency levels in a classroom. Next question, what are some creative ways to use music and movies in language teaching? Oh, I love this question. Oh, it reminds me of that Instagram that's like, ooh, I love this question. For me, music is so important. It's pivotally important, I would say. It's the doorway by which students can access the language, because music does a lot. Music transcends language in a lot of ways. And if you find a song that the kid really likes the beat, a lot of times what's going to happen is they're going to go home and they're going to research the lyrics and research the artist. They're going to research the background. And so for me, I've said this previously in the podcast before, but I do like a bracket competition where, you know, I'll put two songs up against each other. We'll listen to them. And it's just a good way for the kids to like be exposed to the language in like a low stress kind of way. I do provide some scaffolding to that in the sense that, you know, we talk about it afterwards. I give them some sentence frames that they can use to describe how they feel about the song, if they liked it, if they didn't like it, the artist, the beat, the rhythm, whatever. And then, you know, it's just a good jumping off point for them to be able to talk about stuff that's relevant to them. I think we can attest to as educators that every single child has a pair of AirPods in at all time, and they're listening to music. So I believe that's just one way you can use it, right? Another thing that I've seen in the past and I've done in the past is fill in the blank sort of lyric activities where play the song, you know, at a slower pace, or find a song that's a little bit slower in general, and they can fill out the missing words. That's another really cool thing to do with music. Another thing that I've seen people do in the past is do sort of like a response, right? So if it's an upper division class, for example, I'll play a song and I'll say, okay, how do you feel about that song? Like, write it in your journal. Take 5 minutes and just write down your thoughts about the song. And I think that's really impactful as well. And obviously, it's not always going to be 100%, every child in the class likes the song, but it is a good way, like I said, to get them sort of like their foot in the door to accessing language in a different way. Movies, this is another really fun thing to do. There's a lot of different ways you can do this. The first thing is you can do a sort of like a clip chat where you play a video with the sound off. Or even, you know, if you find, I've used Mr. Bean before. He doesn't have any words, obviously, so you could just play with the sound on. And it's a little, some of them can be a little cringy, obviously, because most of the ones that we would use, but a lot of the ones I've used in the past are a little older. And so the kids are like, wow, this is from the 1940s. I'm like, can you just stop for 5 seconds? But you can use, you know, a new movie or whatever. There is a list online. If you look up foreign language clip chat and you search that up, there's a PDF document, or I'm not sure if it's a PDF. It might be it's like Microsoft Excel, Google Sheets. There's a Google Sheets where people have, it's an open document where anybody can edit it, and they put in the name of the thing, what class it would be for, what language it would be for, what the general consensus is, what the rating would be in their opinion, and then how they use it, right? What structures they use it for. And what I've done in the past is I've done a Mr. Bean gets ready or Mr. Bean is late. And what I'll do is this will be during the time that we're using reflexive verbs and learning them. And I'll say, okay, what is he doing here? Like, ¿qué hace señor frijol aquí? Right? And they could say like, se despierta, se afeita, whatever the thing is, whatever the structure is that he's doing. That's just a kind of a easy little, you know, example. But you could do this with a lot of different things. If for your more advanced classes, a lot of times you can use open-ended ones where you're like, okay, you narrate. So something that I did in a workshop one time was we had a movie clip where we left the sound off, and it was two people. It was a meeting of two people. Let's say ex-lovers. We'll just use that expression. And they saw each other in a store, and it was like, what would they say to each other? So you give them a little bit of background, right? You say, esos son dos personas, son amantes, son ex amantes. And they meet each other in a store, and it's your job to be the woman, you be the man, and you fill in what do you think they're saying here. And it's really funny. You would have to have a little bit of an upper division, maybe not upper division, but you'd have to have some students that are more advanced in their skill for that one. But I do think that could be really fun and interesting. I've done that one before. Yeah, so I think that media in general is very important. Obviously, that's sort of like an understatement, but especially when we can kind of channel it and use it in language class is really important, because I think that we want to be like abreast of those kinds of things. My thought is always like, I want to make them be like, I want to pull them in and engage them in some way that they would normally be engaged, right? I know they like videos. I know they like songs. So that's always what I've felt I could reach kids that way. Okay, moving on. That's that section I will title as like teaching strategies, right? Moving on. I have a list here, so I'm like scrolling through. Okay, here's some language learning questions. We'll do a couple of these. What is the hardest language you've ever tried to learn and why? Okay, so this is like a multifaceted answer here. First of all, I felt like I've never had an issue learning Spanish at all. I've always been very interested in it, even when I was a kid in high school. I mean, I didn't go into college, you know, saying like, oh, I'm going to major in Spanish and I'm going to be a Spanish teacher. That was not how it happened at all. If you want to learn more about my story, you can go back to the very first episode, maybe the second. I can't remember. It's either the first or the second. It's been a while since we've done those, but I actually think it's the second episode where I talk about myself a little bit. Now that I'm thinking about it, I think it might be the fourth episode. So never mind. But a little bit of my background is that I went to college as a pre-med major. I don't know why, because I loved chemistry and I had a great teacher. That's why I loved chemistry. Chemistry, I had a great teacher in high school. But I quickly realized that was not going to be my path in life. So I changed my major to Spanish just because I remember how much I loved it in high school. And I had a very excellent teacher my freshman year of college who really sort of like rekindled that love in me for it. And so I was like, yeah, this could be something I could do. I mean, I don't know what I'll do with it, but I had no intentions on being a teacher. But so that was where that started, really. That was a sophomore in college, and I didn't ever look back. But anyways, so throughout that process, I never found that Spanish was that difficult to learn. I always really enjoyed it. I always really thought that, you know, I struggled with like the subjunctive a bit, but like who doesn't struggle? If you say you don't struggle with the subjunctive, you lying. Okay. You a liar to yourself and to me. So anyway, I did struggle with that, but I think that's a universal experience. And through that, I took Italian as well. And honestly, I never felt like I struggled with Italian either. I think that, you know, where I struggled with Italian was that it was so similar to Spanish that the times that it was not similar was very difficult. You know, I had a teacher who I love and still love to this day, who was really great about allowing me to make my mistakes in Spanish. So I would start off a sentence or a phrase or whatever I was trying to say in Italian, and then I would forget the word in Italian, so I just used the Spanish word. Thankfully, he knew both, so it was very easy for him to just be like, okay, I get you. You know, that I never felt like Italian was hard. I just felt like it was a different language. Now, let's talk about the one that I hate, okay? And I've said this before, so this is going to be like a surprise to anyone. It was not the hardest language. It was just not interesting. And because of that, I'm going to put it in the category of being hard for me because I didn't care about it, which was Français, okay? If you teach French, like, I don't even know. I just think that it's so... Why y'all got all them letters? You don't use them. You only use like 7 of them. And then you're like, oh, okay. They only use like 7 of the letters. So I don't need to pronounce it in this word. And then you're like, psych, you got to pronounce it in that word though. And I'm like, okay, well, how do you remember all these words? Well, you don't. You just have rules. That's what I meant instead of words. How do you remember all these rules? And they're like, oh, you don't. You just have to know because you are a French person. And I'm like, okay. I'm sorry, that was probably a little bit rude to the French people out there. If you're French, I apologize. But I feel like it's just, the language is so frustrating to me. Like, I feel so, I don't know. So French would be one. Another one that I felt, not that it was hard, I just didn't really apply myself. I haven't applied myself enough to learn it was German. And I feel like, for me anyway, the way that the words are, the way the sentences are formed is not the difficult part. Because I feel like sometimes I have this thing where I'll start to say a phrase, a sentence, and it'll come up out all jumbled. And my friend Heather will be like, "That you said that in a very German way." And I'm like, I sure did, didn't I? So I feel like the language, the function of the language wouldn't be that difficult. I just don't, I have not applied myself to study it. And that's an issue. So French and German, those have been the hardest two, mostly just because I have not really put forth the effort to do so. French, I just feel very frustrated by, so I've just given up. And that is just my honest that's my honest answer. Okay, the next question, and probably the last one, because we're working on 30 minutes here, so I try to keep these as short as possible, just so that you guys can like listen to these on your lunch break, or listen to these while you're driving. Maybe if you commute, then this will be a good thing to listen to on your commute. The next one I'll answer is, how do you stay fluent in multiple languages? That is a great question. So for me, I use Spanish in my daily life, not so much at home. My wife and my child do not speak Spanish. We're trying to teach Emerson Spanish, and my wife is learning as well, but we're not conversational or anything. So I feel like with that one, I use it at work, so I don't feel like it's very difficult for me to keep up with that one. For Italian, I do have a friend that speaks Italian, so that does help. And then also I use Duolingo. I'll just be honest, I feel, because Italian, I've studied it for such a long time along with Spanish, that's not as difficult for me to keep up with. It is very similar, like I said earlier. So I just try to practice as much as possible. I have an Italian reader that I go through a couple of times just to make sure that I can keep up with the reading. I've never found reading to be very difficult, especially if you learn a Romance language. It's pretty easy to, you know, read the rest of them. So yeah, just practice, just different methods of practicing. I'll listen to videos, watch videos, or listen to songs too. That really helps me. So yeah, I think that that's definitely a few ways that I've found that I keep up with it. Yeah. But yeah, this has been really fun. I've got more questions here. Thankfully, I've had some people ask me some questions over the years that I've kind of collected. So I've got plenty of stuff that we can go through. And yeah, this has been really fun. I really have enjoyed kind of sitting down, answering some of these questions, just talking about my journey and what I like to do as a teacher. And yeah, I, as always, if you guys want to follow us on social media, we're at Linguist Lounge on Instagram. You can search us up on Facebook as well, The Linguist Lounge. You can send us an email, linguistlounge@gmail.com. And as always, we will see you next week. Bye. Ciao. The Linguist would like to thank the following people for their help making this podcast possible. Christian Gaposi for use of your studio. You're the literal best. Our families for putting up with our crazy notions and allowing us to do it anyway. We love you all. Our friends for supporting and loving us. We are truly grateful for you. And to you for tuning in. We hope to see you again real soon. Intro and outro music by Brotheration Records. Podcast logo designed by Monday Morning Creative Studio.